This is the Read, Write, and Create podcast, the podcast where you get a bite-sized session of creative writing coaching from me, Lori L. Tharps. I'm an award-winning author of both fiction and nonfiction, a journalist, and a former college professor. I've spent more than 20 years writing, teaching, and coaching creative writers, so I created this podcast because I want to help as many BIPOC writers as possible get their stories out of their heads and into the world. Are you ready? Let's go. Quick, don't overthink it. If I were to ask you who was the most prolific novelist during the Harlem Renaissance, you know, give or take 1918 to 1937, who would you say? Langston Hughes? Zora Neale Hurston? Well, the answer may surprise you. It was Jesse Redman Fawcett. It's possible you don't even know who that is. So this episode is dedicated to the paradox of Jesse Redman Fawcett. Since April is the month that she was born and the month that she died, I decided this was the perfect time to talk about how this woman could be the most prolific novelist of the Harlem Renaissance, not to mention a prolific poet, editor, and essayist, and yet be the least known writer of that era. In this episode, I'm going to share all about Jesse Redman Fawcett's life and then share four reasons why her star never got to shine. And spoiler alert, part of it has to do with her complicated relationship with W.E.B. Du Bois. Now, are these proven reasons why she remains in the shadows? I mean, not exactly. Technically, they're more theory than fact. But the one true fact that I do know is that Jesse Redman Fawcett deserves her flowers, and her life story can serve as a cautionary tale to all of us writers. So let's get into it. Hello, wordsmiths, writers, and scribes. Welcome back to all of my regular listeners, and welcome to anyone new tuning in to the podcast for the first time. I'm super happy that you're all here to hear about this incredibly important story about Jesse Redman Fawcett. Now, Jesse Redman Fawcett is not quite a hidden figure, more like a forgotten figure. Or maybe the better term for her would be the underappreciated literary figure. Let me just start by proving how underappreciated or how little she is given credit for. So exhibit A, the Encyclopedia Britannica describes Jesse Redman Fawcett this way. They say that she was an African-American novelist, critic, poet, and editor known for her discovery and encouragement of several writers of the Harlem Renaissance. You know, that was her biggest accomplishment, was discovering and encouraging other writers. Biography.com used this as the subhead for their entry on Fawcett. As the literary editor for The Crisis, Jesse Fawcett supported many new voices during the Harlem Renaissance. She also authored novels, essays, and poems. It's like, as an aside, she was a prolific novelist, but really, she was the person who supported new voices. And finally, at blackpast.com, they refer to her as, quote, the midwife of the Harlem Renaissance. Now, that was a term that Langston Hughes used to describe Jesse Redman Fawcett as one of the midwives of the Harlem Renaissance. Now, that's not a bad thing per se, but it is kind of the term that Jesse Redman Fawcett was described with instead of great, prolific, productive novelist, poet, writer. So let's figure out why Jesse Redman Fawcett is only a supporting character in the Harlem Renaissance instead of a star. Jesse Redman Fawcett was born on April 27th in 1882 in a town called Snow Hill, New Jersey. She lived in a middle-class family. She was the seventh child, but her mother died when Jesse was very young. But that did not stop Jesse from having a solid and comfortable childhood. Her father was a minister and he moved the family to Philadelphia. So that's where Jessie was raised and educated. She went to the famous high school for girls in Philadelphia. She graduated in 1900, but she was the only Black girl in her graduating class. Ironically, Girls High, as it is known today, is the high school that has so many famous Black women who attended, including Erica Alexander, Jill Scott, Lisa Lopez of TLC fame, the late great author Bebe Moore Campbell. All of them went to Girls High. But again, at the time of Jessie Redmond Faucett's attendance there, she was the only Black girl in her class. Now, moving on, Jessie wanted to attend Bryn Mawr, another all women's institution, but they didn't want a Black student in their school. But to their credit, they apparently did help her secure admittance to Cornell University. So not a bad place to land. And she did very well there and graduated with a degree in classical languages. So Jessie spoke fluent French. And when she graduated from Cornell, she wanted to be a French teacher. I shouldn't say she wanted to be, but this was obviously a practical decision. But she couldn't even secure a job in Philadelphia because of the race thing. So she ended up teaching eventually French in Washington, D.C. And within 10 years of graduating from Cornell, she went back to school and got a master's degree in French from the University of Pennsylvania. The year that she graduated from University of Pennsylvania with her master's degree, 1919, is the same year that she gets the call from W.E.B. Du Bois to come to New York City to be the first literary editor of the Crisis magazine. So how does she get that job? Well, it turns out that once she got herself established teaching, she graduated from college, Jessie Redmond Faucett is already starting to follow her passions in writing poetry and essays and reviews and submitting them to the Crisis. Back in 1912, she's already submitting and getting her work published in the Crisis, which is a big deal because the Crisis is considered the magazine for Black thought. The Crisis, for those who don't know, was founded by W.E.B. Du Bois, and it was the official magazine of the NAACP. And the Crisis and the Opportunity magazine, which was another very popular and prestigious Black magazine at the time. So Jessie is really obviously a dynamic and successful writer in that her work is being published to the point that Du Bois finally says, hey, can you come and be our literary editor? You're really good. You're really prolific. I trust your vision. And so, if W.E.B. Du Bois says, hey, come be my literary editor, she's going to go. So Jessie packs up her bags, leaves her teaching job, and moves to New York. This is 1919, and she quickly ingratiates herself into the Black literati scene at the time. Now, if you haven't been doing the math, by this point, Jessie is 37 years old. She is almost a decade older than most of the new young literary talent on the scene, which might be why she is kind of characterized as a mother figure or the midwife of the movement. Still, Jessie is living her best literary life. She's writing, she's editing, she's discovering new writers and getting them published in the Crisis. She's hosting literary salons in her apartment in Harlem. She's also writing up a storm herself. So not only is she helping other writers get their foot in the door, she's writing poems and essays and short stories. And she's actually the person who publishes Langston Hughes' first poem in the Crisis, The Negro Speaks of Rivers, in 1921, which we know is the poem that really Langston Hughes is so famous for and gets him a lot of recognition. So she's doing all this work. And if that wasn't enough, she's like, you know what? I should do more, and decides to launch a magazine for Black children called The Brownies Book with Du Bois. And that magazine, apparently Jessie is creating a lot of the content, a lot of the writing. So you're like, this woman, she's hosting salons, she's writing her own poetry and essays, she's editing, she's helping other writers and keeping track of who's got stuff to share and commissioning their work for the magazine. And Then she's like, oh, also, I wrote a novel. Yeah, in the midst of all this, Jessie comes up with her first novel called There Is Confusion. It's a story about two upper middle class Black couples and their lives and loves. And that's in 1924. So she's doing it all. Now, Jessie Redmond Faucett is not somebody to just sit at home and write. She wants to see the world. So back in 1914, she had the opportunity to travel to Paris and spent a summer studying at the Sorbonne University. And after that, she was just in love with Paris and traveled to France and other countries in Europe as often as she could. She loved France, she said, because of the feeling of social, racial, and cultural freedom there. And you can actually see her love of France in a lot of her writing because it comes into play. But yeah, so she's writing, she's traveling, she's, you know, hobnobbing with the literary rich and famous. And she does this for a good long time until 1926, when she leaves the Crisis magazine. More about that in a minute. But she leaves the Crisis in 1926 and is determined to get a job in the publishing industry in New York. You know, that's her goal. That's what she's been doing. She wants to be an editor at a major publisher. But surprise, plot twist, haha, she cannot secure a job because nobody's going to hire a Black woman in the publishing industry. So what does she do? She goes back to teaching. It's what she knows best. It's where she knows she can get solid work. And eventually she gets married just 3 years after she leaves the Crisis. She gets married in 1929. She marries an insurance broker. There's a sense that she's kind of given up on the literary world because, you know, she can't catch a break. But just because she leaves New York and settles back into teaching, she does keep writing. So the year before she gets married in 1928, her next book comes out. It's called Plum Bun, and that's a book about passing. And it's interesting because it's very similar to Nella Larsen's book, Passing, but Nella Larsen's book gets more attention. But Plum Bun has very similar theme. Her next book comes out in 1931, The Chinaberry Tree. And in 1933 is her fourth novel, Comedy American Style. So she's living in New Jersey with her husband. She's teaching. And when her husband dies in 1958, Faucett returns to her home city of Philadelphia. She lives with one of her brothers and lives there in Philadelphia until she dies on April 30th, 1961, at the ripe old age of 79. And she dies of heart failure. So that's the life of Jessie Redmond Faucett, world traveler, writer, novelist, poet, essayist, editor. So why are we not talking about Jessie Redmond Faucett in the same breath that we're talking about Zora Neale Hurston, for example? Well, I have collected four reasons why I think that Jessie Redmond Faucett remains in the shadows of the Harlem Renaissance. First and foremost, I can't think of a worse way to launch oneself into the literary limelight, like what happened to Jessie Redmond Faucett. And I'll explain it this way. First, recently, the New York Times published this really incredible article called The Dinner Party That Started the Harlem Renaissance. And on March 21st, 1924, the article talks about this party. It was a dinner party at the Civic Club in New York City. And it was this interracial gathering of artists and intellectuals, both white and Black. You had all of the white editors and wealthy patrons who were really interested in supporting Black writers with their money. And you had all these Black writers and intellectuals who were just dying to have their work get to a greater audience. And so it was like a gigantic networking event. And people were saying that this was the gathering that really launched or planted the seeds of the Harlem Renaissance. And it wasn't by accident. This party was really the mastermind of Alain Locke. But this party wasn't something that Alain Locke started from scratch. He hijacked what was supposed to be Jessie Redmond Faucett's book launch party for her first book in 1924. So the article in the Times actually begins with Jessie Redmond Faucett asking how her book launch party got hijacked. And so even 10 years later, there's a letter that Jessie Redmond Faucett wrote to Alain Locke, still mad. She says he had managed on that evening to, quote, keep speech and comment away from the person for whom the occasion was meant, unquote. In other words, nobody even remembered that this was supposed to be Jesse Redmond Fawcett's debut book party. So again, nobody was supporting or celebrating Jesse Redmond Fawcett. They were planning the Harlem Renaissance. So that's the big thing, I feel like, that was kind of a portent for how Jesse Redmond Fawcett's work was seen. She was an afterthought. She was pushed to the side for more important things to happen. Second reason why I think that Jesse Redmond Fawcett's work is not given the credit that it is due is that there was no trauma porn in Jesse Redmond Fawcett's work. Her book, There Is Confusion, is about three middle-class Black people looking for success and personal satisfaction with the backdrop of racism forever looming over them. That was her first book. And her subsequent books also center on middle-class Black people and their middle-class Black people problems rather than extreme poverty or racial violence. In other words, mainstream publishing was like, I don't think this is Black enough. And the mainstream public was like, I don't think Black people really live like that. So she didn't have a ready audience and she didn't have a ready group of supporters to get her books into like bestseller status or super popular. Now, granted, all of her books were published, but they simply were not supported. Number three. Now, this is the most conspiracy theory of all of my theories about why Jesse Redmond Fawcett remains in the shadows and sidelined, but I do think it has merit. It's because of her relationship with W.B. Du Bois. So, mind you, this is loosely proven, but it has been theorized in many accounts that Jesse Redmond Fawcett and W.B. Du Bois were having an affair. And whether they were deeply intimate or not, they obviously had a very intimate relationship no matter what, because he hired her and they worked together very closely at the crisis. Now, if they were having an affair, the speculation is even more powerful because there's a real power imbalance in their relationship. Because if Jesse Redmond Fawcett was in love with Du Bois and idolized him in some way, and he had the power to almost like shake his magic wand and give her credibility, you know, he could say something to the world and say, hey, this woman's work is amazing. He could, you know, have his own party for her. He could elevate her status at the crisis even further, but he didn't. So maybe she was waiting for that. Maybe her love for him or attraction for him kept her from doing what she needed to do to get what she needed out of her work at the crisis. We don't know. We do know that when she left the crisis, it was after a fight with Du Bois. And so whatever the relationship was, it seems that perhaps Fawcett was waiting for Du Bois to do more for her. She left in a huff. She left the crisis, which, you know, presumably she could have stayed there much longer and continued to have written and published there, but she didn't. She got married pretty soon to somebody who was so the opposite, you know, not an artist, an insurance broker. So maybe she was wounded in that way. I don't think that her relationship with Du Bois necessarily, like, I don't think he sabotaged her career or anything, but perhaps she sabotaged her own career in some ways, waiting for Du Bois or making herself small for one reason or another, waiting for Du Bois to acknowledge her in some way, shape, or form. Again, it's all theory, but I think it's part of the story. And number four, which is the most obvious reason that Jesse Redmond Fawcett's not as well known as other members of the Harlem Renaissance, is pure and simple. She was a woman. She was a woman in a world that did not recognize women as literary stars. The men of the Harlem Renaissance overall are more well-known, were more celebrated, were given more resources. I mean, except for Zora Neale Hurston, who even herself had to fight really hard to get the recognition that she did get. And we know that she ended up dying in obscurity and poverty. So Jesse Redmond Fawcett did not die in poverty at all, but just the fact that she was a woman in the early 20th century and she was a Black woman, the fact that she wrote about women's issues, it did not set her up for the type of success that she might have seen if she was a man. Historian David Levering Lewis, who did write biographies on Du Bois, he concludes that, quote, for honesty and precocity, Jesse Redmond Fawcett's influence on the Harlem Renaissance was probably unequaled. There is no telling what she would have done had she been a man, given her first-rate mind and formidable efficiency at any task, unquote. Marissa Constantinou is the author of The Women of the Harlem Renaissance, and she writes, Jesse Redmond Fawcett's writing questions racism and sexism, love and loss, risk and sacrifice, and it is well overdue for celebration and recognition, unquote. So again, if she had been a man, we surely would be talking about Jesse Redmond Fawcett in the same conversations that we talk about Langston Hughes, Conti Cullen, and the rest of the writers of the Harlem Renaissance. So what's the takeaway, people? What I want you to take away from this paradox of Jesse Redmond Fawcett? First and foremost, let's just give Jesse Redmond Fawcett her flowers, okay? Let's just give her a round of applause for being who she was, hardworking, prolific, and still in love with the written word. Number two, I think that, you know, one of the biggest takeaways about the way she lived her life as a writer is that despite her struggles and the obstacles that were placed in her way, and there were many, despite the no's that she received, she kept writing. Not only did she kept writing about what she wanted to write about. Even after these people, you know, messed up her book launch party, even after she was criticized for writing about middle-class Black people, she didn't turn around and pull an American Fiction. You know, she didn't like make a protest novel about poor Black people and be like, okay, now will you publish me? No, she kept doing what she wanted to do. She kept traveling. She kept writing. She did the things that called to her that she knew about and that she knew needed to be said. The things that she wrote about in her books were the things that kept her up at night, the things that she struggled with, you know, respectability, possibilities, you know, getting jobs in the fields that she wanted to, not the fields that people said that this is all a Black woman can do. She never gave up. She kept doing things her way. She, you know, and she did stay friends with Langston Hughes and other writers. So I feel like she took a practical approach to having a literary life. So how can we use Jesse's practical way of leading a literary life? How can we be motivated by the unfair treatment that she received and her, you know, subsequent kind of disappearing from our collective memory? This is what I think you should do with this paradox of Jesse Redmond Fawcett. I think that, you know, whenever you're facing an obstacle or rejection, maybe a bad review, I want you to like think about Jesse Redmond Fawcett and keep going for her. Like, think of her as that literary ancestor who would have loved to trade places with you because she had the work ethic. She had the desire. She had the talent. And because of when she was born and the fact that she was born into a female body, she wasn't allowed to be the fullness of her true self. You have that privilege now. You have the opportunities now. And I'm not saying that it's not still hard for Black writers and other BIPOC writers or for women writers. Of course, it's still hard. But it was so much harder for Jesse Redmond Fawcett. So I want you to not feel sorry for yourself. I don't want you to give up. Jesse Redmond Fawcett was a champion of Black writers. She wanted us to win. She wanted us to put our stories out into the world. So do not feel sorry for yourself. Succeed and keep pushing, because if Jesse Redmond Fawcett were alive today, she would be taking every possible opportunity that you have right now, and she'd be getting her work out into the world. So do it for Jesse. All right. I hope that that story about Jesse Redmond Fawcett left you feeling motivated and inspired to keep writing. I just want to thank all of you for listening to this award-winning podcast, and I really do hope that it does something for your writing life. I hope you enjoy listening to the podcast as much as I enjoy creating it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you like to listen to podcasts so you won't miss a single inspiring episode. Also, if you could take a moment to leave a rating and a review for the show on Apple Podcasts, that would be super helpful. Thank you. The Read, Write, and Create podcast is produced by me, Lori L. Tharps. Our editor is Brad Linder, and our theme music is by Wattaboy. I'll be back in 2 weeks on Monday. Until then, keep writing.